We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Good morning, Grinders. Welcome to the DFS pregame show here on Roto Grinders. I'm Jordan Cooper, a.k.a. Blender Ed, Blender HD. If you want to follow me there on Twitter. And it's Mondays, so you know what we do on Mondays. We bring in James McCool. It's Mondays with McCool, James McCool from Pay Dirt DFS, as well as the co-author of The Theory of Daily Fantasy Sports. It's a 15-hour audio DFS masterclass at theoryofdfs.com. Sorry we're late for the YouTube chat, people. We record a lot of NFL content, so you got some showdown stuff for the premium members. Feel free to sign up for Roto Grinders Premium. Click on the link in the description, get $10 off your first month. But give me those thummy thumbs here in the morning. It's a Monday. If you had a good Monday or a bad Monday, whichever thumb you want to give, doesn't matter. I see you guys in the chat. Feel free to type in there if you'd like. We're going to review a little bit about yesterday's slate with James. And I tweeted out, James, yesterday that like a minus 17% ROI, I feel like I got out with an accomplishment. It really all came down to just like my DK cash lineup. I mean, like I did fine on FanDuel. I did fine on every slate on DraftKings other than the main slate. I did the early only. Just came down to like a 3v3 in my DK cash lineup that forced me to swap. And the swap didn't work. Like to me in cash games, if you're gonna consider swapping. Like you swap for the afternoon games if you believe you're behind in your double ups and head to heads and everything. To me, the worst feeling is swapping and then finding out that if you stayed pat, you would have gotten there. But I was pretty sure that I wasn't going to be able to get there. So, like, even though my swap didn't work, had I stayed pat, it wouldn't have worked either. So, like, to me, like, what else am I supposed to do? And I don't think there would have been any. Based on the results that happened, there wouldn't have been any swap. Because obviously I'm swapping off of Madison and I'm swapping off of Cup. And they both put up 25 and 30 points. So like there's nothing I could have done. So if you take a look at my cash lineup and go, why is Leonard Fournette in your cash lineup? Like that wasn't originally there, right? So outside of that, like my GPP stuff was all my lineups were like perfect other than one spot. And then, of course, they get up to like 192, and then like you can't. It's like I'm sitting there going, okay, I got Josh Allen double stack, I got Antonio Gibson in this lineup, I got Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Mike Williams, and then where's Robert Woods one off? Oh, whoops, and a defense that only scored 3 points instead of 12 or 20 or something, and like, oh, and then I go to the next lineup, it's like, okay, I got Najee Harris in here with Jamar Chase. I'm like, okay, this is pretty good. And it's like, oh, Mike Davis is at running back. Oh. Damn it. It's like, there's just one guy that's like in all the lineups. Like I have Cooper Kupp in a lineup. So I got Cooper Kupp. I got Chris Godwin, who didn't do all that well. And it's just like, okay, now let me piece it together. And then it's like, oh, Joe Mixon's in this lineup. It's like, damn it. He didn't get there either. So James, how was your main slate generally yesterday?
Main slate was okay. I talked a little bit in the Discord about my lineups. I had a Chargers lineup, I had an Arizona lineup, and I had a Minnesota lineup. I cashed the Chargers lineup. I did not cash the other two. So I don't know, like down what, like 50% on the day or something like that?
Did you double stack the Chargers? Did you do what, a double stack with Mike Williams?
Yeah. So I did Justin Herbert, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams. I brought it back to Travis Kelce, which
that's expensive. Who the hell did you fit in that lineup?
So at running back, I had Sony Michel and Saquon Barkley. And then at my flex, I had Will Fuller. And at wide receiver, I had Bryan Edwards. Then I had the Titans defense.
Okay.
So secondary correlation of that Las Vegas-Miami game, which ended up working out pretty well. Bryan Edwards goes Super Saiyan in overtime every single time they play overtime. So that was nice. Will Fuller didn't end up getting there. Titans defense was meh. That lineup was looking really, really good going into late games, having Sony Michel, Bryan Edwards, and Will Fuller left to go. Thought there was quite a bit of upside remaining with those pieces, especially since I knew they were going to be like 1% owned. Nobody was going to be getting anything from Bryan Edwards and Will Fuller in those later games. So I felt pretty good about it going into late games. Of course, Cooper Kupp destroyed me, which, whatever.
Well, if you're going to play three lineups, I'm assuming you're just not going to play any part of that Rams-Bucks game.
I had Robert Woods and Rob Gronkowski's secondary correlation in one of them, in my Arizona stack. But I did not have Cooper Kupp. I had Robert Woods as leverage off of Cooper Kupp. But no, I didn't want to stack that. I mostly just wanted to attack the running game with Sony Michel because I thought Sony Michel was way undervalued this week. He came in at like 4% owned in the power sweep. I wanted to make sure that I had some sort of leverage off Cooper Kupp. I wanted to make sure that I had some sort of leverage off of Chris Godwin. I just didn't play much of the chalk in that game. I thought there were other games that were better to attack. Like I really, really liked that Chargers and Kansas City game. I thought that game was way better than the Tampa Bay and Rams game. So I wanted that. I had leverage, direct leverage with a Minnesota lineup off of Madison, who I didn't think he was only going to be 20% out. I figured he was going to be way higher than that. I was proven wrong there, I guess, but I have Minnesota's direct leverage. And then for the Arizona lineup, I did actually have Alexander Mattison in that lineup. That was actually my chalkiest lineup. I talked about it earlier today with subscribers, but my Arizona lineup, had I not had such low ownership on the Arizona lineup, I would have considered it a bad lineup. Like I had Alexander Mattison and Austin Eckler as my running backs, came in 20% and 25%. I had Marvin Jones Jr., who was 16%. I had Robert Woods at 17%. I had the Titans at 18%. If it weren't for Kyler Murray being 9, Christian Kirk being 3, and AJ Green being 1, like, I think that lineup sucks for GPPs. But
you're able to build around the chalk there.
I skated by.
Murray plus Green plus Kirk means you could pretty much do whatever the hell you want with the rest of your lineup.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I mean. Because I had such low ownership on my actual stack and I avoided DeAndre Hopkins and I had AJ Green put up 20 fantasy points at 1% owned, I don't care about the rest of the chalk. But like, if like, say Christian Kirk, for whatever reason, is like 20% owned, I wouldn't have been happy with that lineup. Even with 1% AJ Green, like I wouldn't have been happy with that many players being around 20% owned in a lineup. I just never like to have that.
Right. But you knew that Christian Kirk at whatever, 5K or something, right, was never going to be that old anyway.
But I didn't think that Austin Eckler was going to be 25% owned. I thought Eckler was going to be around 15% owned. I was pretty surprised with the ownership on Eckler.
I was the Eckler ownership. I knew he was going to be owned. There were some places showing him at single digit, and I'm like, that ain't going to happen.
I had him like 16%.
Pretty much exactly where I had him. I had no running back over 20%. In my projection. Now I'm doing my projection for the slant.
Mm-hmm.
So like, but if we take a look at even the spot, like the spy, Eckler's 28, Barkley's 26. Like that's obviously a single entry contest, but we go to the 555 milli. Barkley's 22, Clyde Edwards-Helaire's 22, Madison's 22. We go to the regular milli, and there's no, the only two players, the only players that are above 20% are Kupp and Hockenson. Then you have Eckler 20 and Barkley 20. So, like, I thought the running back ownership would be spread out. And it was. I mean, and it was. It's just a matter of getting the right two running backs. Because the Madison thing, like, if Dalvin Cook was ruled out 2 days ago, like on Thursday, like Madison on DraftKings would have been way more than 14% owned in the $20 milli. Like way now on FanDuel, he was 5,200. So like there wasn't an option there. I mean, like FanDuel, you had too much money. I played the Broncos defense in FanDuel cash and they were the most expensive defense only because I didn't have any money to like I'm playing Barkley's 6K on FanDuel. Madison's 5,200, right? You're sitting there going like, what? I could play wherever I want at this point.
I hate FanDuel.
Played Mixon because why not? He had the workload, 6,700. Then you could play, you could still play Kupp and you could play Waller or Kelsey and you could pay up everywhere. I mean, the only thing that I missed on my FanDuel cash lineup was my last choice was either to play Robert Woods or Mike Williams. And I played Robert Woods for as far as since I was already playing Cooper Kupp, I'm like, let me not make a mistake here. And just like, if it goes either way, right. If it becomes a Robert Woods game, if I have both of them, I don't have to worry about it. Now I cashed in everything. So it's not like it mattered anyway. I would just probably won a couple of more of my head to heads. But like FanDuel was a joke this week. I mean, you could, if you're playing like $4,500 tight ends and wide receivers, I don't know what you were doing on FanDuel. The pricing was just ridiculous. But here, it like from to me, the running back position was the hardest position because it felt like you had a lot of choices, but none like stood like other than Madison, I guess, but none from a projection versus ownership perspective stood out dramatically over others. The one I had the most exposure to was Najee Harris. And of course I lucked out there. Right. But he was never in good line. He wasn't in like, he was one of those, oh, I got, you know, he was like 7% owned and I have like him in a quarter of my lineups, but he still needs to get in lineups that have like Cooper Kupp and Mike Williams and another running back that does a crap, you know, like that type of thing, Madison and those lineups. But it felt like running back, there were a lot of choices, but it still felt like it felt like you could play three running back lineups, running back flex. But I still thought that the four wide receiver lineup in general for GPP was more worth it. But I mean, I let in my 150 build for the slant, like a quarter of my lineups had RB flex. And a lot of times I almost exclusively go wide receiver flex, but pretty much only because there were just so many running backs to choose from. And I figured some of these guys are going to put up 20 plus points and some of these guys aren't, but I don't know which ones they're going to be. So I want a wide swath of exposure to them. The problem came is that if I wasn't using running back flex, I would, you know, obviously my running back exposure kind of goes down. So that's why like that running back position to me, like I think I had like 14 running backs in my pool in various degrees. Like I think I had Kamara in like three lineups or Jonathan Taylor in two lineups or Damian Harris in a lineup, one, two, something like that. But in that like 6K range, like I had 20% Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I had 20% Mike Davis. I had 20% Lenny Fournette because I thought the running backs, like you did it with Michelle. I had like 6% Michelle, but to me, the negative correlation of that game busting is that the running game works on either side of the ball.
Yeah.
But like, so like I went with Fournette instead of Michelle. So like there were a lot of cheaper running backs there. And then the amount of high end wide receivers that were in Cooper Kupp were like nearly infinite. I mean, I had Kupp. I don't know what you had him at. I projected my aggregate or whatever had Kupp at like 26% owned. And even at 26% owned, he was still showing up in like 16 to 18% of my lineups. So yeah, like I still had Kupp, but if I knew he was going to be 33% owned, like he may have only showed up in like 9% of my lineups. I mean, results wise, yes. So I had more Cooper Kupp than even though he was a high owned player, I still had a lot in a lot of lineups. But had I known the ownership, I wouldn't have like that. That's how I have to judge things. Like just like Eckler, like I think I Eckler in like 16 to 18% of my lineups. But had I known he was going to be more like 20% owned, he would have been in more like 10 to 11% of my lineup. Like Najee Harris, if I knew he was going to be 7% owned and not Like I projected him at like 11 or 12. He would have probably gotten into like 30 to 32% of my lineups rather than 25 or 26. So like those are the types of things that I like looking at. But did you feel like running back wise, like if you selected two running backs that totaled a grand total of like 12,000 in salary around, like something like that, 12,000 to 13,000 in salary, you could, I mean, essentially any two of them would, I wouldn't have called you nuts. And I'm talking about for GPP, for pairing together.
Yeah, there are so many running backs. And the thing about running back this week, I think that the reason why it was built out that way, like I didn't have a single running back projected over 20 fantasy points. Not a single one. I had Derrick Henry as the top overall projected running back at 19.88. On the flip side of that for wide receivers, I had five wide receivers projected over 20 fantasy points. And I just think that it was one of those round robin weeks at running back, right? Like you have Chris Carson, Jonathan Taylor, Alexander Mattison, Damian Harris, Najee Harris, Joe Mixon, DeAndre Swift, Tyson Williams, Saquon Barkley. Like,
did you have Tyson Williams on? I didn't. That flummoxed me in cash game. Like in the massive $5 double up, Tyson Williams was 15% owned, and I didn't get it at all. And then I looked at the GPPs. You go to Tyson Williams, like in the 555 milli, he was 5% owned. In the main milli, he was 13%, and the play action, he was 15%. I mean, was there a place talking about, I mean, like, either, like, he didn't project well anywhere that I looked at all. I mean, I played Lamar Jackson. Like, Lamar came in lower than what I thought Lamar Jackson would be the highest owned quarterback on the slate, and he wasn't. He was, like, not even in the top five. And Tyson Williams shows up as more owned than half the other, I mean, more owned than anyone else in that range. And I go, well, I mean, it's not based on projections, at least. I mean, I look at everything around the industry. Tyson Williams is like the 16th highest point per dollar run. I mean, like, what? Why do people just, I mean, are we talking about at the low stakes that people are just like, oh, Lions defense, bad run, let me play the running back, even though they have four guys that run the ball. I mean, it's a three-headed backfield and Lamar Jackson. So like, I don't know. I thought maybe it was just me, but I mean, I saw other people saying the same thing. Like, why is Tyson Williams 15% in cash?
It's a weird one. I had him projected 14 fantasy points.
I projected at 4% owned.
I had him projected at 6.
Okay. 6. So that's what that, but that's the point that I'm making. Like Gronk, I had to bump up. Like Gronk is someone that like, based on all mathematical competency, you know, sensibility, his projected ownership should be like 4%. But like I bumped him up to 12.
Yeah, I'm at 7. Yeah.
Right. So but no, I recency bias. All those like Melvin Gordon gets a little bit. I mean,
yeah.
Rondell Moore, like Rondell Moore was like projected in most places at 5%, and I just bumped him up to like 8 or 9.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. But I mean, the play action, Gronkowski was 14% owned. And the $20 milli was 11.5% owned. And this is at 5,500.
Yeah.
Like this isn't like cheap Rob Gronkowski. So it's like, those are the types of things that to me, like the manual ownership, like, because if I put in Gronkowski at 4%, he's going to show up in Brady stacks.
Yeah.
Like he's going to show up. Like if I play, you know, 12 Brady stacks, he may show up in 6 of them. But if I put him at 12% owned, he may not even show up in any of them. I mean, like, he may be one of them because he's just over-owned for his projection.
Well, and he was over-owned for his actual ability to be a top overall scoring tight end. That's kind of the thing about tight end. Like, when I run my models, because I have them to show how often, since I run simulations, how often a player is going to be the top finishing in the position, a tight end is like, there's usually 1, 2, maybe 3 tight ends that actually have a chance to be the top overall scorers within their own standard deviations. Like if Darren Waller and Travis Kelce are on a slate, that's who has a chance of being the top finishing. Darren Waller had like a 76% chance. Travis Kelce had a 24% chance in this spot. And then there's scraps for the rest.
Tyler Conklin had 20 points.
He did.
Was in my Kirk Cousins. He was in my Cousins stacks.
Yep, Tyler Conklin, man. I had Tyler Conklin projected for 4.6 fantasy points. So, I mean, things like that happen. But it's interesting.
Well, Conklin, you have to understand that Conklin gets a bump, number one, because I'm playing Viking stacks.
Mm-hmm.
And also number two is that he gets a relative value boost off of Madison.
Right, yeah. Like, and like, there's like, more red zone targets. You have to understand,
like,
to
if
go...
I'm going to play a secondary correlation, and I'm already going to have, like, Cooper Kupp in that lineup.
Yeah.
I'm not going to play Alexander Madison, but Conklin gets a small boost because he's negatively correlated to touchdowns that Madison would score.
Exactly.
So he would be more likely to appear in non-Madison lineups. But if nothing's correlated or anything like that, then he's just like he's projected just as any other. You know, he could be Jack Doyle for all it matters, right?
I mean,
like, right. Really, Conklin only appears in lineups with Kirk Cousins or with Metcalf or Lockett or, you know, like.
Right.
Like if it wasn't that, he's not going to be in any lineup.
It would have been like a nice thing in my Minnesota lineup had I gone Conklin instead of Thielen. And I did, I thought about it after the fact, you know, just reviewing my own lineup, said, okay, well, because I had Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen, made it so that I needed to pay down at tight end and pay kind of like this down weird mid-range at running back. Had I paid down for Conklin, then I would have been able to pay in a different area for running back or whatever. Like Conklin was actually a pretty good play, especially because people like, so Dalvin Cook was out yesterday, gets declared out. And then people have to think about, okay, well, what does that mean for the rest of the team? Well, it obviously means that Alexander Madison is going to be getting the lion's share of the running back work, most likely. But it doesn't necessarily mean that he is going to get a large majority of the receiving work. That receiving work can go to people who run within that kind of A dot range, that closer to the line of scrimmage range. At least that's how I think about it. So Tyler Conklin would be somebody who would be getting that small boost. He would also be getting a boost in the red zone since Dalvin Cook is involved in the passing game in the red zone. So those closer to the line of scrimmage guys. I probably should have been higher on Tyler Conklin, to be honest.
No, I don't think that's a mistake. But I mean,
I think
Madison essentially, like if you took your Dalvin Cook projection and just put it on Alexander Madison, that's exactly what happened.
But that's not usually what happens.
Of course not. But I'm just saying you don't second guess the Tyler Conklin thing. My question for you is in the power sweep. Like you play three lineups into the power sweep, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. How many entries? That's the power sweep, the main one.
Around 5K.
5K entries.
Yeah.
Do you believe that at 5K entries, playing any the two expensive wide receivers? Because I'm assuming your run back is Metcalf or Lockett.
It was Metcalf, yeah.
Right. Don't you think that, like, if you're talking about a lineup for, like, a 500-person contest,
yeah,
like, that's fine. But even at 5,000, like, I'm less like, I don't run. Once a wide receiver is, like, over 7K, mm-hmm. like, he can't be run with any other wide receiver that's, like, 5K or more. Like, that's why I can understand Cousin stacks that have, like, one of Thielen or Jefferson and then Osborne.
Right.
Or Conklin, because they're cheaper pieces. And then when you put in Metcalf or Lockett, you still have enough money to actually pay and not punt anywhere else and then make secondary correlations. In the really small field, yeah, I get it. In the really small field, feel free to overstack. If you wanted to play Cousins, Madison, Jefferson, Conklin, Osborne, Metcalf, like if you wanted to do the whole thing, like that's fine in the really small field stuff. But I like in that specific lineup, like I can't see the rest of the lineup projecting well enough that it's worth the correlation of two, like $6,700 Thielen plus $7,400, whatever he was, mm-hmm. Jefferson. It's hard for them to both get there. Cause they both, really, if you take a look at yesterday, what Jefferson had like 29 and Thielen had 17 or whatever. Like that's really for the double stack. That's really not enough. I mean, that would be good for really like for a 300 person field. You got there, like that's perfectly fine. But for mid sized field, like you'd rather have Jefferson have 38 and Thielen have 7, and then only have one of them. And then Osborne's four may not even matter. You may still win with an Osborne four in that case. Or obviously you get Conklin. If Conklin, let's say Conklin only had eight, it's the tight end spot. Who gives a crap? I mean, like, you could still win with that. So to me, the lineups that you made even for the power sweep, like, I'm less inclined to build, like, I'm less inclined to build Wilson, Metcalf, Lockett stacks. I'm less inclined, even Godwin, Evans, even though they're cheaper. Like, in the 6K range, did like, Allen and Mike Williams, like at least I see them. Once they're both in, like, once you're paying, like, 12.5 total or below, like, in that range, there's muddy water. Then it's like, okay, I could see in a high-scoring game that they could do that. But, like, Josh Allen, to me, is easy. Like, I do Allen plus Diggs, and then Beasley and Sanders are typically under 5K, and it's like, okay, this is easy. Right? Yeah, like the Allen stacks I made were, like, I get those. It's these double stacks of, like, even Brown Andrews with Lamar, to me, was fine because they're both under 6K. Right? Even if you're building Shep, like, I built Jones, Shepard, Engram or something. Okay. Like, that, do you believe? I mean, obviously you don't because you did it. Or maybe to me, it's not the projection stuff. It's the construction stuff of I'm not sure. Like I said, I don't know the answer, but I'm not sure if that playing two high priced receivers together is an optimal for a ceiling in contests that are more than like 1,000, 2,000 people in it.
Yeah.
You still double stack. You just play Gerald Everett in that Seattle lineup. Don't play choose Metcalf Everett. And especially if you can fill a tight end spot, which unless you're playing Kelsey or Waller or something, it's essentially a wasteland anyway. So just why not hope the quarterback throws a tight end, you know, play Dawson Knox and you go, well, if you give me 8 points and I'm fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so here's the thing that I did to Minnesota lineup. One, I know that I wanted to build the Minnesota lineup to directly leverage Alexander Madison Chalk. Remember, I thought that Madison was going to be like 30% out.
I had him at 18. I don't know how you could project him for that high ownership in GPPs with the news, really. Like, with literally, we didn't even know if Dalvin Cook was going to be active or inactive.
Well,
it would have been a nice test if Cook was active and then see what the ownership would have been, even if Cook wasn't going to play.
Remember that Cook, he's been doubtful since Friday. I mean, he's been doubtful. And there's been a lot.
Most projections around, if number one, the two, I'm going to make the case two different ways.
Sure.
For the casual players, like, he's not out. I mean, like, he's not, until he's ruled out, like, he still looks like a good play. Yeah. Right. And then, if you like the Blitz and Roto Grinders projections, like until he's actually, like, he's doubtful, but we still got to project him. So, like, the entire until Sunday morning, Alexander Madison didn't have a projection. He had a 3-point backup projection, and Dalvin Cook had a normal workload projection. So it's like, if you were building lineups before Sunday morning, like, you don't have Alex, like, unless you purposely did it. Unless you purposely took Cook out and then made Alexander Madison have a whatever 20-point projection, like, you didn't do anything. And I always believed that Sunday morning, like, people don't react enough to that type of news, unless it's Raheem Mostert, apparently.
I was just going to say, but they do. That's the thing. I think, and you have been wrong on that thought once this year. And right. Now I have been wrong on that thought once this year of how much people are reacting to news. So however you want to think about it, I thought that Madison was going to be higher. So what I wanted
technically, James, the move for the Madison ownership, this I'm making a really, you're really going for it. The delta between Alexander Madison's projected ownership was higher than Raheem Mostert's. Because Madison, if Cook was in, would have been like 0.2% owned, right? Uh-huh. So Mostert at least was going to be owned regardless. He was going to be 18% owned, and then he got up to like 30.
So We had him at like 10%. Anyway.
But you know, I'm making a point of, like, Alexander Madison. people. I mean, we see this in baseball, James. Dude, you could look the weather. You could look at Kevin Roth's reports, and it says this game will be postponed. Like, people will not take out any. People will not take out anything until it's officially done. Or you could read his report and go, they're going to late start this. It's going to rain for about an hour, and then it's all clear. So as long as they have every attention to playing this game, like, they could perfectly play this game, and it's going to look horrible at 7 o'clock. But at 8 o'clock, it's all clear. It's a beautiful night, and set. You know, 6:55 comes around, and you get that notification. Someone, you know, the Boston, New York is in a, you know, the rain delay, right? That's 10 minutes before lock or 15 minutes before lock, and like everyone just goes. And then X is out, like, until that happens, right? If it didn't happen, if they didn't late start, no one would care about the, oh, they're going to play through rain and it's just normally owned. So, like, those are the type of dynamics that I see that like, Alexander Mattison was not, if you listen to a show on Thursday, no one talked about Alexander Mattison. We're talking about Dalvin Cook being a pretty good play against the Seahawks, right? And then by Saturday, it's like, well, if Cook misses, Mattison looks good on FanDuel. So it's just like people just don't react. It's obviously the aberration was Raheem Mostert, right? Yeah. This is the way it normally is. So I couldn't see how you could possibly on DraftKings project him for more. If you tell me 22%, okay. But I mean, I couldn't see him getting up to 30 or 30, 35 with less than 24 hours notice.
I will disagree with you.
Yeah, but I was right. I ended up being
you, right. You were right. That's fine. I don't mind being wrong about it. I'm just talking through my thoughts of why I built my lineup the way that I did.
No, you built your line. If well, it's one of those things. Remember, like I'm saying, like, oh, Cooper Kupp is way more owned than I thought he was going to be. Like that. Like if you knew that Mattison was only going to be 20% owned, 18% owned, you knew that the relative value of that leverage stack is worth a little bit much less.
And I likely don't have Thielen if I think that he is only going to be 20%. Because Thielen was a conscious play here. Not necessarily the double stack. Like, I was going to double stack.
Well, Thielen takes touchdowns. Basically, Thielen is the touchdown. Like, he sucks touchdowns from
exactly. Exactly. So that was the thought here. The thought was not to double stack and get a whole, like, I didn't expect both Jefferson and Thielen to have over 100 yards. I expected to say, okay, in this contest, it's 5,000 entries. If 25 to 30% of people have Alexander Mattison, and Alexander Mattison likely needs to have a touchdown to get there within his range of outcomes. Obviously, he got there because he had 112 rushing yards and a whole bunch of receiving work. Whatever. That's besides the point. Likely, Alexander Mattison needs to score a touchdown or two in order to actually kill me in GPPs. So if 30% of the field has him, and I think that he needs to score touchdowns in order to actually kill me, I'm going to take the person who is most likely to take those touchdowns away from him with Adam Thielen.
Thus, I thought you were going to say Tyler Conklin.
No, not Tyler Conklin. Even though Conklin, I could have gone that route with Conklin. And I admit that as well.
No, your reasoning is sound. Like in cash games, like my DK cash lineup heading into 4 o'clock, like to me, it either was going to be the most ingenious switch ever or going to die because I had Mattison, I had Cup, I had Woods, I had Godwin. Okay. So I had four spots with a running back spot and Mattison. So Mattison, Cup, Woods, Godwin. Right. And I'm behind Cup and all these guys are other Woods is the lowest owned out of the bunch. And all these three other guys are like going to be 45 to 75% though, like the other three, Mattison, Godwin, Cup was the stone chalk.
Yeah.
So like Woods, I don't mind because Woods is negatively correlated to Cup. So I don't mind keeping him. But how do I fit all these spots? You know what? It perfectly fit. I didn't plan it out, but it did. So instead of playing Mattison, I play Fournette, which is leverage against Godwin, right? Then I take Cup and Godwin out and I play Jefferson and Thielen, which is negative leverage against Mattison, right? Like it, like, and Woods is negative leverage against Cut. Like all the chalk guys, their ceilings are hurt when the other guys score, but of course they scored. So like, it didn't,
It's brilliant. It's very beautifully built.
Thielen actually had pretty good games. I mean, I was like, okay, I'm good. Okay, Madison's 25 points. Like there's no comp. There's no way I could have cashed.
No, you lost.
I lost. Right. There's no swap that I could have made. Oh, in the beginning, I'm like, oh, maybe I should have made Metcalf instead of Jefferson, and then the Seahawks did nothing the second half anyway. So it's like this. Those are the types of things. There's nothing I could have done, because if I would have left it alone, I wouldn't have made it either. So like, that's it. But I'm saying, but I understand exactly the point of, to me, Thielen is the most negatively correlated to Madison.
I agree. Yeah.
And especially at his ownership in comparison, if we take a look at Jefferson's ownership, Jefferson in the small millie, the regular $20 millie was 6% owned. He was way more. He was double the ownership in the big mill.
Yeah, he was 11% in power suite.
Right. Yeah. Well, in the big 555, he was 12%. And then we take a look at Thielen. Thielen was actually owned similarly in the $20 milli, but 6% in the 555 milli. But at 6% ownership compared to Madison, see, the thing is that if you go by Madison, like, you don't get enough like relative value. Like if Thielen is 6, but Madison's only 15.
I know.
Then it's not worth it. Then it's really not worth it. You'd rather take the much higher projected guy at running back.
And the other point that I wanted to make about this lineup was that I was absolutely over leveraged on it. Like,
yeah, that's fine. And that's perfectly fine to do.
I am frustrated that I had so much, because I had 2 players over 10% owned and I had 3 players over 5% owned.
So who are your running backs in that lineup?
I had Jonathan Taylor and Damian Harris.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Way low. Yeah. And that was another discussion that I had.
That's what I would have changed. I would have, like, if I'm going to play that Minnesota Vikings, like that lineup like that, I would have been more likely to play Barkley or Clyde Edwards, like play chalkier running backs that have a, because those two guys didn't even have good, like.
Well, they had good projections for me.
You'd play Najee Harris there instead. Play Mixon, even if it fails. I mean, just saying, like, I don't think, yeah, you didn't have to get that different at running.
And I agree. And that's what I said. Like, I was over leveraged and I wanted to get more ownership at running back. I absolutely should have gone Saquon Barkley instead of Jonathan Taylor. Or I should have dropped down from Damian Harris to Clyde Edwards-Helaire and
jumped Mike up. Davis, even. I mean, just like, we're like, Mike Davis wasn't like that owned.
I'm not going to play Mike Davis this week.
I played a lot of Mike
Davis. I cannot believe why he was so highly owned when we see
that Cordero. Highly owned.
Cordero Patterson.
James, how do you not project? Tell me how you don't project Mike Davis well at 5,100 against the Giants.
I can tell you. Hold on.
You realize heading into this week, he is the fourth in highest expected running back points.
What was his projection?
Well, what was his? I don't know. I don't have it in front of me.
Okay,
his projection was like 15 something or something.
I had him for 12.36.
Okay,
which is not terrible.
Which is not terrible. No, it's not.
But at 5,100, like when Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I have projected at 15. I have Sony Michel projected for 18. I have
Sony Michel. I had nothing where close to that. What are you getting? 18.
Because the Rams love to run the ball in the red zone. I had Leonard Fournette projected for 14. I had Melvin Gordon projected for 14. Like, Mike Davis was 21st overall in median projection. So playing him, like, as much as there is.
But you're the only one, because I could tell you around the industry, Mike Davis projected pretty good everywhere.
Yeah, well, a 12.36 compared to 15 is like, we have a 3-point difference. That's like a reception for 10 yards.
Can I find this? Do we have projections? Yeah, I think, what, 14.63? Oh, this is actual.
So
is this
2.3.
Let me take a look at this.
I'm trying to go through the back.
I don't know what I'm looking at here, because it says fantasy points, but I'm not sure that's the old projection, because Madison's only 17 points. No, that can't be right. Okay. Never mind. But don't you think that Mike Davis, number one, at 5,100, getting 60%+ of the rushing work, getting a double-digit target share against the Giants. He gets extra. He gets a little boost for being negatively correlated to Saquon Barkley, right? I truthfully, I've no issue with me playing 20% Mike Davis.
I think that Mike Davis at his price was not the worst play on the planet, but he's not somebody that I would have considered as like someone I wanted to play in one of my three lineups.
Oh, he's not someone I want to play. Mike Davis is never someone I want to play.
What even was that discussion?
No. You don't. I'm talking about from a bias perspective. Like he's someone that you don't want to play.
No. I don't have a bias.
But the numbers say that you should play. So like I
don't have a bias against Mike Davis. He projected for 12.
No, I have a bias against Mike Davis. Mike Davis is awful.
But you have to admit,
James, that if CEH went out and got six fantasy points, you wouldn't have been shocked. Like the fact that he got the 100-yard bonus even after fumbling the ball. He only caught two passes.
Yeah, I didn't want to play.
I'm not arguing against CEH's projection. I'm perfectly fine with. I applied 20% CEH also, so I'm fine with that. But how? Other than the fact, I mean, to me, the difference between Mike Davis and CEH is just that obviously the Chiefs are better than the Falcons. But like, what makes Mike Davis that much different from Fournette or different from Michelle or different? Like, from to me, Mike Davis has a higher target share than all of those other running backs. The only difference is that Mike Davis may not have the touchdown equity.
And that's the big thing. I care a lot about touchdown equity. Atlanta, going into last week, only ran the ball 28% of the time in the red zone. In the red zone, 28% of the time.
Get there. So what does it matter?
Right. So, but that's the point, is like being able to project Clyde Edwards-Helaire better, even though Kansas City consistently has a very, very high pass rate. Even Kansas City has a higher run rate in the red zone this year at 35%. The Rams, the reason why Sony Michel projects so well is because the Rams run the ball 52% of the time in the red zone. And we know, we've talked about it before. I think we talked about it last week. Running backs need to score touchdowns. That's like the thing for GPPs. If you can get a 5K running back that scores a touchdown, has 50 yards and four receptions, like you're happy. So being able to take a running back out of the pool like Mike Davis, who I just do not think is going to score a touchdown.
Sony Michel, he's going to catch four balls. Where's Sony Michel catching balls out of the backfield? He's not.
But the Rams had a significantly higher chance of scoring touchdowns in the red zone.
Okay.
That's what matters. So,
I'm not saying Sony Michel is a bad play. I'm just saying in general, like you can't tell me that like, oh yeah, Sony Michel, I'm okay clicking that button, but not okay clicking the Mike Davis button.
I am, because I have Sony Michel able to actually score a touchdown.
Yeah, but on what? On 18 carries for 50 yards, no targets. He has 11. Mike Davis got 11 points yesterday.
He did. Okay. Sony Michel without a touchdown.
Well,
and Sony Michel has like a 4x chance better of scoring a touchdown than Mike Davis does.
Yeah, but Mike Davis could catch nine balls out of the backfield.
But he didn't.
But he can. He has a target. That Falcons team is a nightmare. How does Kyle Pitts run like a route on like 85% of plays and not get a target until the fourth quarter?
Because Matt Ryan is retired.
No, Ben Roethlisberger.
They're both retired. And I'm just saying that too.
Are we getting to the point where any defense against the Steelers is just...
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, this is why I've been so low on Najee Harris coming into the year. And, like, that might be...
Higher on him now? Because Ben can only throw the ball 6 yards.
If he's going to get, like, 40 targets per game, yeah. But that was the reason why I was so low on Najee Harris in that offense in general. It's like, dude, Ben Roethlisberger has been contemplating retirement for 5 years. For like, half a decade, this dude has been falling apart. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, well, look at the target share for Deontay Harris or for Deontay Johnson. Look at Juju Smith-Schuster. He has a TikTok account. Chase Claypool can run the ball, too, in the red zone. Najee Harris got drafted, like, 27th overall. It's like, what about Ben Roethlisberger? What about, like, the guy who has to, like, distribute the ball to all of these guys? How are you drafting all these people when Ben Roethlisberger is basically like a walking crutch at this point with an arm that barely works? And then week 3, his arm is working less because he has a pec injury now. So
Also, to be fair with Najee Harris's outcome, like Deontay Johnson was out, Juju right. got hurt. Like,
who else do they have? What?
Yeah, they don't have Ray McLeod running routes. I mean, like what?
Right.
Like
James Washington, who hasn't been able to get open since Nam. Like,
right? I know.
Of course, they're just gonna throw the ball to Najee Harris. So situations like that. I mean, we saw it with Saquon Barkley his rookie year. The Giants were a train wreck, but Saquon Barkley was still very, very good for fantasy because, like, they didn't have that anything.
Also, that's also Eli Manning also.
Well, and Eli – well, is Ben Roethlisberger better than what Eli Manning
was? No, but I'm just saying with Barkley, like, compared to Daniel Jones now, like, I'm maybe one of the few that rates Barkley kind of a little bit like that, a little bit less. I think the data from when he was with Eli Manning doesn't hold up with Daniel Jones. Not because, it's not even because I think Daniel Jones is a better quarterback than Eli Manning. Is that Daniel Jones is more likely to scramble, run the ball, and also throw deeper.
Yeah, I agree.
More likely to hit Sterling Shepard than Eli Manning, who is basically drop back for 2 seconds. If the first read doesn't work, dump it off to Barkley.
Yeah, which is now just Ben Roethlisberger. It's just kind of the same situation. Like you nailed it. He just steps back. Ben Roethlisberger is now so slow and so broken that he can't throw the ball 25 yards down the field, even if Chase Claypool is open. So, like, he just has to dump off Najee Harris at this point. And that might lead Najee Harris to a great fantasy season with Steelers going, like, 4-13 or something like that. I don't know. Does that offense, let me ask you this. Does that offense get better if Ben Roethlisberger misses time with Mason Rudolph at QB? Like,
what how does it not get better?
Right. How sad is that? Like, we used to take defenses against Mason Rudolph, snap decision. It was like a snap push as soon as Mason Rudolph was, like, declared.
Yeah, but Mason Rudolph isn't that bad. If it was Nathan Peterman, when David Carr
goes down. Oh, that one was even better. Remember Nathan Peterman and that infamous 6-interception game? It was like the first 6 passes of his career
were interceptions. Well, okay, last thing before we get out of here. What was your projection? This is, starting on Thursday or Friday, later in the week,
mm-hmm.
he was getting steamed, if you want to call it steamed.
Sure.
I couldn't see how you got his projection up to a point where it mattered enough for GPPs, especially on Justin Fields.
Oh,
people were asking me about this on like Friday and Saturday going like, are you having how many field stacks you have? And I'm like, the Bears have the 3rd lowest team total on the entire slate. And am I going to play a rookie and what double stack with Mooney, Kmet, Robinson? It's like, dude, we have 5 games with 50 plus totals. Why am I even playing the Bear? That's basically the thing that I didn't get. He's 5,200 and he has rushing upside. So, okay, I get it. But why are we stacking this game? Why are we doing Fields plus 2 guys and Beckham and OBJ back? And I'm like, and there's no projection set that I look at that makes that lineup like anywhere close to projection. So like that's I was confused about. I was confused. I mean, dude, Justin Fields in some of the higher stakes cash games was like 20% owned. And I'm wondering like why? Like play Daniel Jones, if anything, for 600 more. Or just go up and play Lamar, like, you know, play like a grown adult would, you know, you could pay up a quarterback now.
I had Daniel Jones projected like legit good. I had Daniel Jones projected for 28 because his rushing market share is in like, it's like 36% or something through the first 2 weeks, obviously. But like, if they want to keep letting him run, Daniel Jones projected really well. So I absolutely agree with that. I had Justin Fields projected for 15.6. Like, and that's trash. For reference, I had who's another bad quarterback?
You probably had Carr for more.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I had Carr for 22. I had
Bridgewater for more. Right?
Jacoby Brissett for 16.9.
And Jacoby Brissett until overtime didn't throw the ball past 3 yards.
Right? And he was cheaper. So like Justin Fields, the thing that I said on my stream on Saturday with the Bears. I know that people are excited about Justin Fields. I know that he has upside. I know that people are stoked on it. But like when he was announced, that line did not move an inch. They did not move an inch. They did not become better. They didn't get any movement on their line. The over-under went down. Like, if Vegas thinks that Andy Dalton to Justin Fields is worth less value to us for DFS, you should listen to Vegas. Like, Fields might be good. Fields might be awesome. Nagy sucks. Bad. That offense is trash. And like, it's kind of how I talked about with Jalen Hurts, which has been wrong up to this point for sure. That if Philadelphia doesn't build an offense around Jalen Hurts, it doesn't matter that he has a lot of upside with his legs, because we see it with Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones might be a legit good upside quarterback, but Jason Garrett's a Neanderthal. So like we don't see it. We might not see it with Justin Fields because Matt Nagy has like the offensive coordination of a fifth grader playing out in the field. It doesn't make any sense. So
right, you can say the same thing for Trey Lance. I'm assuming the first Trey Lance start that ownership will be up. And massive. It's like, well, you're dealing with Shanahan, and Lance will have three. He'll end up be a pocket passer and hand the ball off 40 times.
And he'll throw the ball 17 times. He'll have 15 completions for 160 yards. And they'll win the game by 40, but it doesn't matter because there are certain spots that are dead zones. And the Bears, I'm very surprised that people were super high on Justin Fields, 20% owned. I saw some really respectable people talking about Justin Fields and how they used him in cash. I'm like, why?
Well, I don't know why. That's why I wanted to confer with you that maybe like it's the same thing with the Tyson Williams. It's like,
It wasn't a mathematical thing.
I mean, I take a look at ours. I take a look at the Blitz. I take a look at other, and I subscribe everywhere. So to do the sanity check stuff, and like the sanity check Justin Fields, I go around and I go, dude, like he doesn't even project well in like place. I mean, yes, he's in the cheap range. I think he had a better projection than Jacoby Brissett, but like not much more. Like right. If you were going to pay down, he played Daniel Jones. If anything, he had a like several point higher projection in every place that I saw.
Yeah.
And that's why the same thing with Tyson Williams. It's like
mathematically, it doesn't make sense. The ownership,
right. You do projections at least. So I'm looking at other people's stuff. So like, I'm like, well, how did they get it wrong? And if you're saying that you had Jacoby Brissett projected better than Justin Fields, then it's like, okay, well, I guess there's my sanity check.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. I think that a lot of people kind of fall into wanting things to work out. And because I don't even watch games unless I have a sweat going and I just want to like enhance my sweat. Like I watched the end of the game last night because I was in 25th in the 222 and I wanted to like, I needed Jimmy G. And I was like, all right, he gets a chance here. And then he fumbled. So it turned it off. But I just build based on spreadsheet, and based on spreadsheet, like Justin Fields is going to project badly. The Bears had one of the lowest implied team totals. They don't pass. Matt Nagy's an idiot. The Browns are a good defense. They play keep away. There weren't going to be a lot of plays in the game. Like nothing mathematically said that Justin Fields is a good play.
Okay. Let's get out of here for now. I got stuff to do. Programming note. There will be no DFS pregame show tomorrow. No, none tomorrow. So if you show up, there won't be a thumbnail. There won't be a show. There won't be nothing there. So just, I didn't die, right? But I guarantee I'm going to get like 7 DMs. Like where at 11:10 or something. Where's the show or something like that? There is no show tomorrow. But James, people can find you at paydirtdfs.com.
Yep, paydirtdfs.com. And you can find me on Twitter at paydirt_DFS.
Yes, and obviously we're both the co-authors of The Theory of Daily Fantasy Sports. 15-hour audio DFS masterclass at theoryofdfs.com. Hit the thumbs up button on your way out the door. Hit the notification bell to know when we go live. We got the showdown slate. I don't know. It's Will and someone else. It normally it would be me, but I'm not on tonight because I'm off. And so click there. Anything else today? No, we just got the premium stuff. Tomorrow, I've got the first look. stuff. This, it's NFL content. It's all the time, right? And then basketball will be back in like 3 weeks. So there's content all the time here on the YouTube channel, as well as in Roto Grinders Premium. Click on the link, get 10% off your first month. But I will be back Wednesday, so there's no show tomorrow. I'll be back Wednesday at 11 o'clock Eastern for another edition of the DFS pregame show on rotogrinders.com.